To my dearest friends, I am honored to welcome you back once more for a retelling of an ancient tale. Throughout the years, the raging warpath of the brutal orcs has left an indelible scar upon the galaxy, with untold thousands of star systems having been conquered and scavenged purely for the sheer thrill of such an endeavor. But whilst the Greenskins are formidable foes indeed, they are undeniably rather dim-witted. And if left unchecked, they will be just as likely to spend their days clobbering one another over the head around a campfire, rather than actually achieving some form of goal. But fortunately for the orcs, within their clans, it is not uncommon for an innately powerful greenskin to seize the mantle of leadership, and these boys would be known as the war bosses. Thanks to them generally being meaner and greener than of anyone else within the tribe, the orders of the boss will be obeyed by all, and so his directives and commands will be tended to by the amassed rabble of boys. Typically, a boss will only have one single desire, and it will be to launch an immense wah to drown out the stars in an orky tide of brutality. He will go on his own fickle whims to decide where would be best to invade. But with an entire tribe of orcs at his back, he will be almost unstoppable in barreling down all who find themselves in his way. But nevertheless, whilst many xenophobic scribes will lump all orcs together as being indistinguishable from one another, in truth, no two war bosses are alike. They will be driven by different desires, follow different cultural practices of their species, and some may even ascribe to views which are to be considered as rather un-orky. Thanks to these differences, the galaxy is awash with the stories and tales of the orc war bosses, with each being more bizarre or downright savage than the one before. Rumor has it that the collection of stories which I am to share with you today were once told around a campfire by a famed naturalist, held captive by an inquisitive war boss who wished to learn of the adventures of his distant kin. Yet I do believe that these are secrets which have been lost to time. Regardless of the truth to this, however, I do believe that it is time for us to begin. Our varied tales will take us across the breadth of the galaxy, moving from world to world, as we explore some of the most interesting or fantastical of war bosses found in the grim darkness of the far future. Firstly, let me tell you the tale of the war boss known as Clawjaw, who defied all odds and led a mighty war against the Imperium to carve out his own great green empire within the stars. In his youth, Clawjaw went by a different name, as his fellow boys simply referred to him as Cog. There was nothing to truly set him apart from the rest of the unremarkable rabble within his garden variety tribe, and by all accounts, he would be expected to live out a relatively short, humdrum life, until finally dying during a laughable raid upon a well-guarded imperial settlement. For you see, the tribe which Cog belonged to resided upon an imperial world named as Boars Prime, although to the Greenskins they used a name which was far easier to remember: Bork. Dotted around this frontier planet, we would find small industrial settlements and outposts which were the most common target for the orc tribes to attack. They would simply amass and charge them down, hoping to steal away some of the shiny loot from the rubble, which they could then sell off to a curious mech. In any case, as the years passed, Cog repeatedly managed to survive these small-scale engagements, and after each battle, he seemed to be growing far meaner and even a fair bit greener. This continued until he couldn't help but dream of a day where he may stand as the petty tribal ruler of his home camp. And indeed, many of his fellow orcs seemed to agree with his plans. He had grown slightly larger from his battles, and in time, it was not so out of the question to believe that he could overthrow the current boss of their camp. However, simply becoming the war boss of such an inconsequential tribe upon this wayward world would not be the limit to what Cog could eventually achieve, and perhaps he simply needed to dream a little bigger. On one fateful day, as he was hunting through the arid brush of Bork, Cog found within a desiccated bush a rather scrumptious-looking squig. The portly beast was deep in a midday snooze, completely unawares to the drooling boy leering over it, slowly creeping forward, ready to pounce. With a rather astonishing swiftness, Cog snatched up the squig and with great glee devoured the dastardly delicacy. As he polished off the final tasty morsel, he found himself in the throes of a rather peculiar haze, and yet this was nothing that an orc should worry about, and so he simply lay down, ready to have a little nap of his own. But only when he awoke from his slumber did he realize that something quite extraordinary had happened. His body had grown immensely, rippling with dense green muscles, all packed onto a frame far taller than he could remember being. His jaw was now incredibly full, bristling with shiny new teeth, with some even rivaling the size of a snotling's leg. But perhaps what had changed the most was his mind. He was now dead set on one thing, and that would be war. The newly grown boy, not keen to waste more time out in the wastes, returned to his tribal camp, where he proclaimed to all that his name was Clawjaw. One rather stupid boy, upon hearing this, piped up and asked if he used to be called Cog. But just as the words left his mouth, Clawjaw seized the dull-witted fool, ripped his arms off, and ate them. Nonetheless, through Clawjaw's squig-induced visions of conquest, the small tribe in which he now presided over swelled to a truly prodigious size. The rival camps upon their world of Bork quickly banded together under his new leadership, standing in awe at not only his physical bulk, but also from his sheer ruthlessness in battle. Newly united, Clawjaw led the orcs of Bork on a war to take control of the entire planet. The tribes constructed an immense artillery unit named to them as Darkrator Maker, with the intention of using it to blow up the world's moon simply as a point of entertainment. But instead of this, they ended up using it to destroy the Imperial's capital Hive City, securing the final victory for the orcs. The Greenskins have since set out into the stars, charging through the void as the warband of Bork, reaping a great host of worlds for the violent boys. Thanks to his truly ruthless treatment of his enemies, Clawjaw has earned the grizzled nickname of Dar Mighty Mangler, and all within the cosmos have come to fear the approach of this infamous greenskin. Eyewitness accounts report that the boss leads his great tribal armies directly from the front lines, riding at the head of a brigade of customized battle wagons, trundling out, belching forth immense pyres of inky black smoke. Thus far, they have been tearing through the mysterious ghoul stars, remaining almost completely unopposed by the fractured worlds of this subsector, which has resulted in Clawjaw being able to carve out a vast empire for his loyal orcs. Once upon a time, there was a mighty orc war, led by the infamous war boss named as Tusker, who even by greenskin standards had a notable obsession with Crumpin and killing anything larger than himself. In every single battle, he would be known to seek out enemy battlemasters, rival commanders, or even colossal engines of war, but each and every time he encountered them, he found that they were never quite enough to sate his unending hunger for a good scrap. As his personal kill cruiser trundled out through the void, leaving a grotesque cloud of sooty exhaust in its wake, it just so happened that the warp itself briefly buckled, and a nightmarish demonic entity was able to carve its way through to reality, manifesting itself within the crew quarters of his ship. A petrified Grot rushed to find the war boss Tusker, and with its limited vocabulary, it just about managed to blubber out that a beast with teeth was tearing through the crew. After clobbering the little runt, and having a good laugh at the tiny grot-shaped imprint now to be found on the underside of his boot, he strapped on his power claw and raced out towards the sounds of battle, eager to discover what was causing all the ruckus. Upon entering the bulkhead, Tusker was very pleased with the carnage he found. The many-armed, many-headed impossibility of a creature in his ship was slick with the blood of the orcs, and was currently in the process of devouring an incredibly startled commando who thought that he was well hidden behind his fungal beer mug. Tusker lunged into battle, snatching at the Neverborn horror with his sparking claw. With blood and immaterial ichor splashing across the room, Tusker eventually managed to slay this hellish monstrosity, and to commemorate such a victory, he claimed its dark horns for his own personal trophy rack. But this battle had given Tusker with a rush that he had not felt since his younger days of crumping other war boys, and so he swore an oath to pursue more of these tainted warp beasts to fight, aiming to lead the greatest wah against demons that the galaxy had ever encountered. In order to bring forth more of these demonic horrors, he knew that he would need some equally freaky of orcs to summon them. Thus, Tusker gathered up every weird boy he could find and set his entire fleet on a relentless warpath towards the Cadian system. Landing on the world of Prozen, he warmed up his boys with a brief, 2-week-long battle against the squishy Imperial Guard forces, who were somewhat panicked about the sudden appearance of an orc war in this region of the galaxy. But nonetheless, once they had had their fun, the weird boy Covens initiated a colossal orky ritual, catapulting their entire fleet directly into the Eye of Terror, from where Tusker would lead his boys towards the largest of demons that the roiling depths of the warp could muster. Within the yawning abyss of that immaterial hellscape, the greenskins were met with a truly unmatched treasure trove of worlds to plunder. They landed upon planets entirely coated by a sprawling, perfected landscape of glittering blue crystals, which the boys found great pleasure in smashing. Purulent jungle worlds were explored, and beneath the diseased canopies, a host of jubilant, bubbling creatures could be found, which at first glance appeared to be somewhat edible, but in actual fact, they proved to leave a taste most foul between their teeth. Colossal twisted palaces were found atop tall mountainous peaks, within which the boys were provided with a truly abominable range of deplorable and bewildering sights, prompting them to burn down this den of inequity before leaving in a confused yet somewhat intrigued state. A puny human may have gone utterly mad from seeing these worlds, but for the orcs, they found great pleasure in destroying everything and anything which they could get their grubby green hands on. As the fleet ventured deeper into the warp, the boys soon spied a rather enticing world of crimson shining out like the deep red eye of an orc, and this was something which they simply could not ignore. Making planetfall upon this twisted realm, they found that it was thoroughly coated in a thick layer of blood and gruel, and within this grisly ocean, tortured entities seemed to thrash around, desperately trying to break through to the surface, as if they were indeed trapped within its sanguine swell. But aside from these sorry fools, The boys couldn't find any demons worth fighting. And so, to vent their rage, Tusker ordered for his mob to simply attack the planet itself, letting off their steam before regrouping their horde and venturing out to find a new world. As the boys continued to land their great, brutish chops into the inflamed grounds, it seemed as though the planet itself was flinching and shuddering. This only prompted the orcs to strike harder, but it didn't take long until the writhing movements of the landscape jutted outwards, spitting forth a legion of jagged, blood-drenched entities who charged to clash with the invasive menace. The battle raged on, with more and more of the entrapped demonic figures bursting out of the gore. But for the orcs, they were unable to replenish their heavy losses. Their mob grew smaller and smaller, slowly being eclipsed by the crimson horde spilling over them. And yet, a far larger adversary was soon to join in with all this carnage. With a mighty tear, the ground beneath Tusker opened up, and clawing forth from the planet's heart, a greater demon pulled itself out to the world's surface. This so-called Blood Prince sought to rid the world of the Green Plague, claiming the skull of each and every troublesome boy for the glory of the Chaos God Khorne. As the demon stared down Tusker, its face contorted into an impossibly large smile, sporting a jaw so full of teeth that it would make a boy from the Bad Moons blush. But all Tusker saw was a good fight and a barrel full of teeth to claim after the crumping. The two battled for hours, and yet, whilst Tusker himself was locked in his duel, all of his fellow boys had sadly been killed under the weight of the demonic legion. Even as he fought, the war boss was barely holding on, teetering over the eternal abyss of death, until finally, he was brought to his knees by a mighty stab from the demon's blade. As the Blood Prince towered over the dying orc, he let out a mighty roar echoing across the planet, proclaiming the glory of this battle for Khorne. But as the demon continued to pontificate, Tusker channeled his final scrap of life to reach up between the creature's legs, and with his power claw, he made a mighty orky proclamation of his own. Whilst Tusker may have died along with the Blood Prince that day, it would not be the end of his story. Khorne was so enamored by the scale and violence of their battle that from now on, with each new dawn upon the Blood Planet, that Tusker and his orcs will rise once more from the dead, where they may do battle with his demonic legions for the rest of time. Truly, this is as close to heaven as an orc can ever find, as he gets to revel in combat against some of the strongest of enemies to ever exist. And from this, we can safely assume that Tusker starts and ends each day as perhaps the happiest orc in the warp. Whilst not quite a war boss, the Big Mech, known as Head Crumper, led his own warband for many years, until his curiosity eventually got the better of him, and he learnt as to why some technologies are best left untampered with. Head Crumper led his boys through the vast reaches of space, happily clobbering all who could be found, until he eventually reached the recently awakened Necron tomb world named as Suranus. Since they had only recently emerged from slumber, the Necrons were unable to muster their full phalanxes to counter the fearsome orc wave crashing down onto their planet. And so, the Necron Lord Mepthk struck a pact with the ruling Mech, offering him several doomsday cannons in exchange for the orcs to leave the world in relative peace. Even though Head Crumper was determined to plunder the rest of this shiny world, the squig wheels in his brain were rapidly turning at the thought of obtaining this curious glowing technology, and so he happily agreed, yet secretly planned to return at a later date to claim a greater bounty of loot. As the orcs departed, they set their course for the imperial agri-world of Eden Prime, and promptly after landing, the big mech was eager to try out his shiny new toys. But he would not be content to simply use it in the form which the Necron provided, as instead, he was compelled to make his own adjustments and personalizations to the arcane technology. Thus, Head Crumper, inspired by both Gork and Mork, tore apart the Necron artifact to find out if he could indeed modify the mysterious pulsating energy core of his new doomsday device. In but an instant, as soon as he had crammed his trusty wrench into the impossible machinery, Head Crumper, his boys, his wah, and even the entire planet of Eden Prime vanished in a bright flash of white light, leaving nothing but a fading field of sparkling green energies drifting through the void of space. Head Crumper, with all his orky know-how, had smashed open the containment chamber of the Doomsday weapon, causing a cataclysmic chain reaction, ultimately unleashing the entire energy potential of the weapon onto the planet. Thus, perhaps some mechs would be more successful in their endeavors if they could come to understand that if it ain't broke, then don't fix it. To return to true war bosses, let us explore the short yet mind-boggling tale of the orc known as Grizzguts. Having arisen to prominence during the latter years of the 41st millennium, he had become somewhat infamous by his fellow greenskins for his unmatched kleptomania. For you see, this boss simply could not keep his grubby green hands off of anything which caught his attention for even a moment. It was well known that if one was to travel within the great cruisers of this fleet, that each and every boy should keep his personal belongings locked and hidden away, as Grizzguts would routinely traipse about his ship, plundering and looting whatever wasn't nailed down. But regardless of this pilfering habit, the boss had directed his great warband towards the Morlock system, after hearing that it could very well harbor a rather interesting weapons factory that he could rifle through. In order to reach his destination within an acceptable time frame, Grizzguts, in all his wisdom, yelled at his crew to batten down the ship, strap in the loose grots, and to prepare it for a warp jump. Rather unfortunately, the extent of orc knowledge on warp travel is fairly limited, and so it often comes down to them clobbering the dysfunctional warp drives stolen from an imperial ship until they sputter into life, jettisoning the makeshift barge into the swirling hellscape of the warp, from where it is truly doubtful that it will emerge at its intended destination. Although on this occasion, it was not just the location which was wrong, as instead it looked as though the boss's watch had span backwards through time. Grizzguts and his ship had not appeared within the Morlock system, but instead it seemed to have appeared directly behind his own ship, just before it had originally departed into the warp. Scratching his broad green brow in annoyed confusion, the boss ordered for his crew to board his old ship, as he knew that he still owned this craft, and so he may as well add it to his growing fleet. But upon entering, the orcs were met with a most baffling sight. Not only was the ship identical to their own, but each and every boy aboard found their own doppelganger, who each claimed that they were just about to set out into the warp to reach the Morlock system. Naturally, the mass hysteria and general puzzlement of the dim-witted orcs could only lead to one outcome, a brawl. The boys crashed into their past and future selves, throwing each other over rusted tables, much to the dismay of the more disoriented of weird boys, some of whom simply died from bewilderment at such an event. Grizzguts, meanwhile, was still intent on reclaiming command of his old ship, although he himself could not quite work out if it was a craft from his past or future. But in reality, it did not matter. as it still belonged to him. Venturing through the chaos, he reached the familiar command deck. However, as a most unsettling sight, he saw the past version of himself still sitting within the captain's chair. The two quickly engaged in a shouting match, which inevitably descended into their own brawl. However, the future version of the war boss had a good few minutes' worth of extra experience over his past form. And so, with a great strike of his hammer, he clobbered the younger boss, claiming victory over himself. Thankfully, from this, he was able to take a spare copy of his favorite gun, along with the rest of the loot found within his old chambers. And yet, his boys were not having as good of a time as he. As the boss returned to the crew quarters, it was still filled with the raging mobs of rival orcs fighting with their younger and older selves, completely bamboozled as to how to resolve the situation. From what we understand, the war boss, though indeed still in charge of his green-skinned masses, was unable to effectively bring calm to his boys. From this event, the entirety of his warpath has been ground to a confusing halt, and legends say that the two ships of Grisguts are still locked together, with the time-lost orcs within still waging their own war against one another. The somewhat primitive orc clan of the Snakebites is often overlooked by the various factions of the galaxy, who see them as being backwards fools, who can barely grasp even the crudest of technologies found throughout their species. But one boss, named as Hruk Tiefsplinter, was sure to bring some pride to his clan by carving out a rather unique warpath throughout the stars. He had slowly conquered the binary star system known as Korva, but this was not done for the usual orc desire to wage war, as instead he wished to create something of a nature preserve for his colossal pets. For you see, Hruk Tiefsplinter lorded over a truly impressive zoological collection, holding vast hordes of near every squig variety found throughout the stars. Squig sharks swam through the oceans, squigosaurs charged through the brush, squigoths left their immense prints in the dust, and even musical squigs could be found, singing out their curious song for all to hear. Whilst undeniably impressive, his hobby of squig rearing could not hold the boss's attention for all of time. Growing somewhat bored of watching the squig hawks dive bombing terrified grots, he decided to take his entire collection on a great tour throughout the stars, using their colossal might to conquer new worlds for himself. And perhaps from their travels, he would be able to find new squig varieties to bring back to Korva. Thus, he rounded up the enslaved population of his star system and ordered for them to construct him a mighty battle barge, containing an immense holding pen which could be used to house his beloved creatures. With his truly gargantuan ark now built, he led the various squig types into their new dwellings and set out into the boundless void. From his animalistic warpath, Hruk Tiefsplinter has unleashed the most violent and brutal of squigs down on dozens of imperial worlds, and from their carnage, he has been successful in seizing control over 9 of the sacred shrine worlds of Marlisakt. Within their old capital, he has repurposed the ancient, awe-inspiring basilica into being a new breeding pen for his gigantic squigoths, who have now become rather infamous through this region of the galaxy for their foul smell and fierce incontinence. As the polar opposite to the primitive snake bites, there once existed an orc war boss known as Zagnok Iron Brain, who had been cursed with an unending obsession with technological advancements in whatever form he could find. Thankfully, since he ruled over a warband of the Bad Moons, he was wealthy enough to amass such a pile of teeth that he could employ a truly impressive league of famous mechs, each of whom were tasked with inventing and cobbling together new snazzy tools of war. But above this rabble, Zagnok kept a small group of the finest of mechs and pain boys in his own personal retainer. As for them, they would be entrusted with a far more vital task to pursue. For, you see, the boss was always fascinated by the idea of cybernetics, and so he originally hoped to enhance his own mob to contain a true horde of cyborgs. But as time went on, he realized that perhaps he could better spend his teeth not by improving his own boys, but instead by enhancing himself. Thus, each mech was tasked with producing a single perfected limb, which the Pain Boys and Mad Docs would eventually transplant onto the boss's immense frame, transforming him into a cybernetic boss beyond compare. First, it was his legs, then arms, organs, then entire abdominal region, chest, and eventually his neck. By this point, only his head remained untouched, but even this would soon change. Though the docs initially protested removing Zagnok's brain after a quick clobbering, they soon came to realize that they would still be paid, and that if this is what the boss wants, then it'll be what the boss gets. Firstly, they replaced the lower half of his face, switching out his mouth with an impressive steel jaw, with a crude voxcaster being fitted within his throat. His skull, meanwhile, was shattered and replaced with a far superior metal frame before a rather brave doc reached in and removed the majority of his brain, replacing it with a salvaged Mechanicus computer system crushed down to a suitable size to fit within his cramped head. Though all seemed to be going well, it was, at this point, that the great cybernetic orc encountered a rather troublesome problem. During the surgery, a crafty grot orderly, named as Luck, had slipped a recovered radio receiver in with the crumpled computer, and though it had cost him his life savings in teeth to buy, it would soon pay dividends once this plan came to fruition. As the docs and mechs left, Luck retrieved his own radio transmitter and sent his first command directly to the brain of Zagnok. Stirring from sleep, the boss could not quite work out why his body was moving. He still had part of his old brain, which clearly protested these actions, but the vastly superior computer system had seemingly taken control, forcing him to stand and lumber about his room. Just as quickly as he had risen, the boss's body froze, and there upon the floor was the grinning face of the pathetic Luck. Zagnok would have lashed out and crushed the little blighter, but he could not. His body was rooted to the floor, completely at the whims and directions of the grot, who simply couldn't wait to reveal the final step in his master plan. The next day, as the rest of the camp awoke, the cybernetic boss strode out from his tent and called for an assembly with his mob. He roared out that his name was Zagnok Ironbrain, and that by his word, the masses of enslaved grots and snotlings were to be emancipated and freed from their subservient oppression. Some of the crowded boys were clearly somewhat confused, but any who spoke out were promptly crushed by the cyborg boss, who had seemingly had quite a change of heart towards the little green bastards. In actual fact, however, he was merely being controlled by the grot puppet master, known as Luck. No orc would ever dream of liberating their servile underlings, and yet from using his crude radio transmitter, the revolutionary grot had seemingly wrangled command of this entire tribe. As time went on, further societal changes occurred within their tribe. The newly liberated grots were to be placed at the head of their camp, with the orcs themselves falling into a more subservient role, now lorded over by the ruling class of Gretchen. This quiet revolution and ascension of the pathetic Grots into becoming bosses themselves is one which would make even the Red Gobbo of Gorka Morka proud, and the Gretchen Revolutionary Committee would call out three cheers for the victory of these little blighters. But above all others, it was luck who was most pleased with the fortuitous turn of events. He now spends his days lounging about in the old boss's quarters, sending out his orders and directives through the shackled mind of Zagnok Ironbrain. But this old orc, rather tragically, is forced to spend his days trapped within his own body. He is fully aware of each and every action he performs, and yet all he can do is watch. And it now seems that he is cursed to spend the rest of his life as a cyborg who holds no mouth and yet must scream. Though it is rather rare, we have indeed seen the crazed figures known as Weird Boys seizing leadership as the war boss of their own tribe. As one of the lesser known examples of this, the wandering weird boss known as Gazlighter had stumbled into a small camp upon the world of Duna Secundus, from where he simply crushed the existing war boss under a psychic conjuration of a great green boot. From here he gave a brief, frenzied speech to the boys, which in all fairness, not many understood. But he claimed that he was the harbinger of both Gork and Mork, and through his vision would he lead a great war which could eclipse the entire galaxy in its relentless green tide. Slightly unsure of how to respond, most of the tribal orcs remained silent, exchanging confused glances with one another, whilst a few others awkwardly clapped at the bizarre display of impassioned hysteria they had just witnessed. Seeing the lack of support, Gazlighter summoned his great green boot to hover over the camp as a threat, which was received loud and clear by the boys, who now scurried about in support to their new boss. As time passed, the Weird Boy made a series of sweeping changes to how life within his new camp would function. For one thing, he renamed the world itself, claiming that during the day it was Gork's Fist, and by night, Mork's Fang. Similarly, the old boss's tent was torn down and rebuilt as more of a curious tribal effigy, which to most of the boys looked rather uncomfortable to sleep within. But it was not only the camp which changed from his influence, as in time the weird boss picked up a few cultural practices from the boys himself. For you see, this had originally been a tribe of aspiring beast snaggers, who would one day hope to lord over sprawling herds of near feral squiggoths charging into battle atop their colossal bulk. But this was simply an orky dream, as in truth they were rather unsuccessful in breeding and rearing their animalistic companions. Within their dusty pens, the tribe only held a few dozen of their own small, runty and undeniably inbred squigs, who could do little but run around in wonky circles before collapsing into a miserable sleep. Gazlighter, however, was enamored by these squigs. He could not avert his gaze from their splendor, seeing them as jubilant symbols of prestige, who exemplified what it meant to be an orc above anything else. So much so did he adore these ferocious little creatures that he soon desired to rule over a camp inhabited purely by squigs, as his new orky subjects were simply too lazy to fulfill his own prophetic vision. Thus, he invited one of the more lackadaisical of war boys to join him in an abandoned shack, and with a sudden puff of green energy, the boy was transfigured into a rather confused and fairly irate squig. Snatching it by the feet, the weird boss dragged this gnashing creature out and tossed it into the squig pens, claiming that it must have escaped somehow and that everyone should keep an eye out for more squigs running about the camp. This continued day after day, with many of the boys being fairly confused as to why their boss was constantly running around, carrying new squigs under his arms, and even the older orcs were left fairly confused, rubbing their chins in deep thought as they tried to remember if this camp ever held as many squigs as it did now. Eventually, the boss could not restrain himself to acting during the day, and soon, as night fell, he moved from shack to shack, from tent to tent, and from cave to cave, transfiguring even more of his orcs into squigs. As dawn broke, and as the world of Mork's Fang turned into Gork's Grin, there were only a few dozen boys left to be roused from slumber. Within their once crowded sleeping quarters, they were now alone, and once they walked out into the streets, they were met with a most curious sight. The squig pens were utterly rammed, almost overflowing with the violent little beasts biting and chasing one another, and there in front of the gates was the boss. The small group of remaining boys approached their wild, weird boss, with one of the orcs meekly stepping forward to ask if the boss knew where his mate Zog had gotten to, since he hadn't found him within his tent this morning. Gaslighter, upon hearing this, simply smacked the boy over the head and claimed that he himself was Zog, and that he had probably just gotten too drunk on fungal beer the night before, and to stop acting stupid in front of the tribe. Thankfully, the other boys, whilst still a little dim, were not so stupid as to forget their own names. Growing rather rowdy, they demanded for the weird boss to tell them where all their mates had gotten off to, but again Gaslighter boldly lied and proclaimed that there had never been a tribe to begin with, and that the few dozen boys who had gathered here had only just wandered into his camp the night before. Understandably, the irate boys could no longer stand the confusing claims of their maddened boss. Rushing forward, they clobbered him good before lifting him up into the air and tossing him into the squig pens. The gnashing creatures were shockingly fast in their attack. It barely lasted a minute before they had utterly torn apart and devoured Gaslighter, who in his last moments cried out that the squigs would obey his command, and that the boys were being far too stupid to ever think that he could be betrayed. But the weird boss was now dead. The remaining boys, not quite sure of what to do, decided to think over their new position by having a good squig roast, and with their pens now containing several hundred of the meaty little beasts, they would be able to feast for weeks. Thus ends our collection of short tales on some of the more fantastical and downright bizarre of war bosses found throughout the stars. There is almost no limit as to what a focused boss may achieve, but as we have seen, their aspirations can vary so wildly that they will lead their boys to certain doom if it somehow pertains to their enigmatic plans. In a galaxy as large as ours, where billions of worlds are dotted about the cosmos, we can be sure to find orcs of every variety, many of whom will grow as war bosses, and we will only be able to speculate as to the carnage they may bring from their vicious rule. But in any case, my dearest friends, I believe that with this, that we have come to our end. I thank you each and all for listening to these tales in their entirety, and I hope that the bizarre stories of the orcs were a welcome reprieve from the usual chaos of the 41st millennium. For now, however, as I once again close this chapter on our tale, I wish for you all a fond goodbye.